Jobar Rustavelli Avenue. This is TabilePod.com coming to you from our studios high atop Prospero's Books and Cafe. Today is Thursday, the 20th of September, 2012. On this date, in 1187, Saladin begins the siege of Jerusalem, or Saladin, as he's referred to in English. But I used to live right along Saladin Street, so I think of him as Saladin, who, by the way, was Kurdish. In 1990, South Ossetia declared independence from Georgia. In 2001, George Bush declared in a joint session of Congress the War on Terror. The war was won 7 years and 4 months later when Terror signed an unconditional surrender on the USS Missouri aircraft carrier and is now serving a life sentence in Leavenworth. 1 year ago today, the U.S. officially ended Don't Ask, Don't Tell, allowing gay men and women to openly serve in the U.S. military. Today is the birthday of Sophia Loren and Upton Sinclair, the latter of whom wrote the immortal words, the most politically apt quote I know, and here it is: "It's difficult to get a man to understand something when his job depends on not understanding it." My Georgian Journal and Kvitis Palitra column this week is about, you guessed it, the systemic problems in the prison system, how NGOs have been talking about it for years. The government has ignored it, as has the parliament. Let's see how serious they are now by how long they pay attention to it, not what they do right now. Yesterday, I did a special podcast with Tom DeWall and Rob Parsons. Tom DeWall from the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace in Washington, who's probably written the coolest stuff on the Caucasus as a region that everybody ought to check out, the most famous, best book about the Karabakh situation, as well as a lot of reports, very good election report that came out recently. Rob Parsons, who started Kanal Pik here in Georgia and was the head of the BBC in Moscow and now works for France 24 and is just a well-known journalist who speaks perfect Georgian, by the way. We just sort of chat about the elections and the big picture, stuff like that. I hope it's still there. We just found out that evidently old podcasts have not been staying up and that the new one, when I upload it, eclipses the old one and makes them go away. And so we're trying to work on that, and I hope that that's no longer the case. But if it is the case and you're listening to this, I guess you can't listen to that. But anyway, we'll try and fix that. Today, it's only Matthias and me. Cameron is in Bosnia. What we say has nothing to do with our employers or any of that. Matthias, we covered there in terms of,
thank you.
Of dispensation or whatever you call that, declamation or whatever that is. Okay, the big story is just 12 days before the parliamentary election, really heart-wrenching video footage from Tbilisi's Goldani prison number 8 has created waves of protests across Georgia. Opposition TV stations Maestro and Channel 9 have aired the videos. People are watching them on YouTube, including prison guards raping an inmate with a broom, and then a series of prisoners sort of going into a room and getting beaten by a group of guards.
And it appears that they have much more that will still maybe be released, maybe not.
But it seems, and evidently they've had the tapes for quite a long time, but sent them for maximum effect, put them out right now, and they've been releasing them. You know, they didn't put them all out at once, so there'll be, you know, more, and there were more and more coming out. On the afternoon of September 18th, hours before this video was released, the Georgian Interior Ministry said three officials of prison number 8 were arrested for inhuman treatment of prisoners, releasing footage showing two prison guards beating an inmate in a cell. The government claimed that the arrested prison officials abused inmates and made a video record of it in exchange for money in a deal arranged by Tamas Ishvili, an inmate who's serving his jail term in the same prison and has family connections with Bidzina Ivanishvili. According to the Interior Ministry, several prison guards and officials were bribed by unspecified clients with the help of Tamas Ishvili, but the ministry did not specify what the motive behind the allegations was. One of the key figures behind the story with video, the video recording, is Vladimir Bedukadze, a former guard in the same prison who is now in Brussels and who passed the footage to Channel 9. On September 19th, prison minister since 2009, Khatuna Kalmakhalidze, resigned. Kalmakhalidze was quoted as saying, No matter who has organized it, I regret very much, and I want to assume the human and, of course, the political responsibility for it. Interior Minister Bacho Akhalaya, who ran the prison system from 2005 to 2008 and who is believed to oversee the system informally, also was a major target for demonstrators on Wednesday who gathered in front of the Philharmonia to demand his resignation, evidently because I think Misha was in the Philharmonia at that
time. That was the rumor, at least.
Whether or not he was, I don't know. On the same day, Georgian Chief Prosecutor Murtaz Zodalava announced the arrest of 10 officials of the prison system in connection with the Prison Number 8 scandal, including Gaga Murnalidze, deputy head of the prison system, David Kuchua, head of the prison number 8, and his deputy Victor Kacheshvili Bedukadze was announced as wanted. You know, this was just really horrendous, the videos that were being shown. And there's so many different things that are wrong about this. It's, you know, it's hard to list them. I think the first one is that, you know, everybody knew this. This had been reported on by NGOs and by the ombudsman for a long, long time. And the government didn't care at all. And, I mean, you know, all the NGOs that pay attention to human rights were told, well, we know the donors give you money to, you know, to criticize us, so you just go ahead and criticize. And nobody really cared about it. And to his credit, Giga Bokeri has said that quite clearly. I mean, said that they made a very, very serious blunder by not paying attention to this. Just as sadly, you know, Gheorghe Tuhushi, the ombudsman, said this to Parliament and gave a very lengthy report to a largely empty Parliament.
Right. Nobody bothered to show up. And, I mean, it was kind of a demonstration how little the MPs cared. I mean...
Yeah, I mean, it really was. I mean, it was, you know, there were a few MPs there, and, you know, but, I mean, I don't know. Nobody was really... paying much attention, nothing, you know, there was a little bit of discussion after the fact, but it really was almost saying, like, you know, we don't care what you have to say. I looked around and tried to find out, you know, who is in there, but if you look online, you can, if for anybody, for instance, wanting to find out if they're a majoritarian member of parliament or there, it's not difficult to get a seating chart of parliament and to look at the camera sweeping the crowd and see if your incumbent MP was sitting in the group. But very, very few members of parliament were there, and there was no follow-up whatsoever, no commission at all.
But actually, the prison number 8, it won some, some UN agency.
WHO
Best Practice Healthcare Treatment Award.
Yeah, I mean, everyone is saying that. That's a little harsh because I think it was specifically about its methadone program, which, I don't know, maybe is particularly good, for drug addicts. But I don't think that it covered the entire, whatever. But... in any case, then Dato Bakradze, the chair of parliament, his comments I found a little bit frustrating. I mean, the first comments that came out when it was made was, this is, you know, done by people who are trying to harm the state and politically motivated, and we're going to, you know, the usual shoot the messenger thing, you know, that... it's all politically motivated and we're going to catch them and they were paid to do this. Now maybe they were paid to do that and frankly nobody really cares.
And even if it's, you know, it probably is politically motivated, the whistleblower probably had, you know, a good motivation to release it now.
Absolutely.
But it doesn't really matter what motivated him.
Yeah, absolutely, because, you know, this had been talked about for a long time and nobody cared, and they did it at exactly the precise time to have maximum political effect, and it seems to be working. If this had been released when they had them, if they indeed had them last May, you know, frankly, there would not have been as serious a response. And, you know, so I hope that that will incentivize the government and the ruling party in the future to pay more attention and maybe not be so suspicious about the motives of NGOs when they're, you know, making recommendations about institutional reform. Because, frankly, I think sometimes... the recommendations are treated really quite cynically if they're paid attention to at all. So first it was shoot the messenger. Then it was, and this is what Bakadze's comments were about almost entirely, were about, you know, we'll punish the perpetrators, meaning, okay, we'll get a bunch of prison guards and, you know,
the lowest level possible.
Yeah, the absolute lowest level possible, the people that were on the video, when everyone knows, because I don't know anyone in Georgia who doesn't know somebody well who's not in prison. Everyone knows that this is a systemic problem. This is the way the prisons operate in Georgia. And, you know, it really hasn't been, at least as far as I can tell, until today, that the statements have started to say, you know, we have a real systemic problem and we have to fix it.
And we screwed up not paying attention to it.
Right. Yeah. We screwed up. I think Giga made his comment at some point, you know, yesterday afternoon. I have not seen, you know, Misha's comments, and I don't know what his apology was like. But this is the first time that I've heard, you know, senior members of the authorities make an apology, you know, and say that we really blew it. I don't know. Have you ever heard that before?
No,
I
don't
can't.
Think so.
I mean, maybe there's a case. We'd be interested to see if there has been a case. But you know, check. Let us know on the forum. But there really, you know, there was some sincerity. The problem is, you know, 10 days before an election, who knows? You know, I mean, are we getting that sincerity? You know, because. For electoral reasons or you know,
right.
What?
So I think the first day was kind of panic from the government, and now the second day is more strategic crisis management from their side. And today they offered George Tugushi, the ombudsman, the post of penitentiary minister, and he took it. So that's a kind of a surprising move, maybe, that he moves 10 days before the elections into that position. And the question is, I think, can he, as the Minister of Penitentiary, or for the penitentiary, really make a difference? Because, the minister that just left and took political responsibility, I think most people would say that she's not really running the system, that she's not the top decision maker. And with Bachua Khalaya still Minister of Interior, can there really be, you know, a full investigation if the person who's widely assumed as running the whole system and being at least to some extent responsible for the whole thing also leading the investigation. So, I mean, there's a lot of people who would now have to investigate the whole thing who are basically in it. And so the question is, how can we have a really independent and transparent follow-up to this and make sure that there's actually some, you know, reform going on now?
Well, that's an important question. I mean, the history of this whole thing, I'm not an expert. The impression that I have is that it was when the thieves-in-law, you know, they are, the government is so proud about ending the system of thieves-in-law, and they did end it, and it's important that they ended it, and the fact that they ended it is, is to their credit. However, they were proud, and I would say bragging, about the ritual humiliation of thieves-in-law. For those who don't know, that's a sort of a, I don't know, like a criminal fraternity that came out of the prison system that was quite influential here in many ways.
And they have their own code of honor.
Right.
And so one, or basically I think at least part of the motivation behind this apparently systemic, you know, torture and abuse is that by taping this kind of humiliation, you can really destroy the reputation of these people in the thief-in-law system, so to say. I'm not an expert, and maybe there are some listeners out there who know more about this. There are PhDs written about them. But one thing that I've been told from several people is that if you're a thief-in-law and you basically on tape admit that you deny that you're a thief-in-law, then you kind of lose a lot of your status. If you deny your background, the same if you're basically, you know, raped and abused and like treated like not even an animal, you know, like treated like, I don't know, being should be treated. And if that is taped and that's shown to the other inmates, to, you know, maybe your circle that is still out there, how, you know, how that, you're no that, longer a person of respect, and
that that was, you know, that was a big a big part of it. And so and again I think it was, you know, there was a little bit too much bravado by the government in sort of in this public humiliation of them. I mean, I, you know, maybe they say that that was necessary, I don't know, but they seemed to enjoy that a little much, and it was certainly extra judiciary, and it was Bacho Akhalaya that seemed to be in charge of that. Now, you know, after that, it was Dima Shashkin, now the defense minister, who then became the head of the prison system, and from allegations that I've heard, although again I don't really know, that it was at that point in which what was done to the thieves in law began moving into the rest of the prison system,
right.
and then was sort of set up that way so that the whole system, it was almost like the system of the way military recruits in the Russian military were treated, called Dedovshchina, where, you know, as soon as you get in, you're beat up and you
right.
end up working for the rest of the inmates, and it's just a real mess. And then terrifyingly, Shashkin went on to the education ministry and was in charge of putting in the system of mandateurs. Now what I read Vano Menabashvili said is that, well, you know, we have not had sort of beatings or torture in police, among the police. But, so now we're going to have to, deal with this within the prison system, which is under the Ministry of Justice. But a lot of what happened is because over 90% of the people who are in prison never went to trial. They're there via what's known here as plea bargaining, which essentially means you get picked up for a crime and you're told, OK, you can go to court, lose the case and serve, a very, very long time in jail. Or you can give us a bunch of money. And you'll only serve a year or two or three or a lot less. And everybody takes the plea bargain, gets together the money and pays it off. And the amount of money that's gathered, which is not disaggregated, it's just one single number in the budget, is precisely the same. I think about $110 million is exactly the same as what the prison system costs to administer.
Yeah, and it's basically another problem with that is that the prosecutor has like complete freedom in setting the fine. So, you know, depending on your family background, if the prosecution knows that you're from a richer background, they might set a higher payment in the plea bargaining agreement than, you know, somebody else would get for the same crime. So there's no real rules and not a lot of transparency in the whole system, I think.
Yeah, there's no transparency in the whole system. It really is a very, very dangerous system, and one that, whether or not it's designed to give the, state control, it certainly does, because it gives them sort of just complete discretion to do,
right.
To do whatever they want. Now, that's... I think there are a fair number of falsely accused people that are serving that are serving jail terms, and I would imagine that some of them there could be some political reasons for that. Whether there's a large number of political prisoners, I don't know. I don't think that there's an enormous number of, say, journalists, for example, that are thrown in jail. That's not the case here the way it is. Other countries in the neighborhood.
Shalva Ramishvili was
in there for a while. Sometimes I hear things that he says, and I think maybe somebody ought to... No, sorry. No, just kidding.
Oh,
you can't say that. Now that we're like sort of a media outlet. But yeah, Shalva, he's quite a character. Anyway, so it's not... I mean, I don't think it's used overtly politically, but I mean, they're a little bit casual in terms of evidence. There's certainly a lot of, credible rumors that, drugs are planted or this or that. But it's more just the fact that people do not have the ability to do anything about it. I mean, everybody knows that there's really no chance that if it goes to trial, they're gonna get a fair trial. And so I hope that that Tughushi will put some more transparency into this, and that the whole criminal justice system will get looked at a little bit more carefully.
And it's time to kind of. Now we have such low crime rates in Georgia, and the government is rightly proud about that. But now I think the prisons are full, crime rates are down. So now I think it's it's, you know, about time to take the next step, which is like, how do you reintegrate these people into society? You know, like, if you have systematic abuse, torture, if these people go out, like, how do you accept them to expect them to have a normal family life, you know, to be a normal citizen after being treated like that for years?
Yeah.
I mean, that, you know, would pose a new kind of risk potentially that, you know.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Okay. 12 non-governmental organizations released a statement on September 19th condemning the torture and inhuman treatment in the prison system and demanding an immediate investigation into the crimes committed. The statement reads, and I quote, "The problem is not just inhuman treatment in the prisons, but also the broader operations of the Interior Ministry. This is highlighted by the acts of violence and detention of prisoners by police in connection with important political events such as on the 26th of May 2011, the 15th of June 2009, 15th of June, and the 7th of November 2007. End quote. The statement further adds that the Minister of Justice, Minister of the Interior, and Chief Prosecutor, and officials from the Ministry of Corrections, Probation, and Legal Assistance, quote, should be held politically responsible, end quote. 12 NGOs also called on international human rights organizations and diplomatic missions, as well as the Ombudsman, to monitor the progress of the investigation of these cases. The U.S. Embassy in Tbilisi issued a statement on Wednesday saying, quote, "We share the shock and revulsion of all Georgians at the terrible acts reflected in the images that came to light yesterday," end quote. The embassy calls for the government of Georgia to conduct its ongoing investigation in a thorough and transparent manner. The EU delegation to Georgia has also called for a thorough and transparent investigation of abuse of inmates.
And Tia Georgia and Gaila today also emphasized that it's important that, you know, Ministry of Interior, Ministry of Justice, and the Chief Prosecutor are not involved in these investigations, that they are kept out of that, and that the investigation is truly independent.
Yeah,
not like in previous prominent cases when high-level Ministry of Interior people were accused of, you know, being involved in a murder, the Sandro Girvliani case, and then basically investigated themselves with, you know, surprisingly little results.
Yeah, I will. I think that it's really important that somehow the investigation or those who have authority in the investigation, you know, are not party to this and have some public trust. I will also say that the European and American statements seem to me to be, you know, concentrate very much on, you know, punishing the perpetrators with very modest discussion of systemic problems there. And this society of discipline and punish, that everything's about punishment, and, you know, it sort of presumes that the system is good, and the system's not in a number of different cases. There's a stunning absence of parliamentary oversight for this. It's really, I mean, I cannot think of a more clear indictment of this parliament that it did not call for a commission to look into that report by Tughouche, leave alone the whole criminal justice system itself. And neither the EU nor the US statement really said anything about that. So yes, of course it would be good if there's an investigation of it, but I think we've gone a little bit beyond that. According to Georgian e-participation webpages, the project implemented by the Institute for the Development of Freedom of Information, the number of likes on President Saakashvili's Facebook page has fallen by 2,500 in the last 2 days.
It's still probably a lot of people.
Yeah.
Just
yeah,
like Ivanishvili. I mean, we're talking several hundred thousand.
Hundreds
people,
of them, yeah. So,
you know, might be a few fake accounts among there, but, you know,
right.
Everybody does that these days.
All right. Foreign Minister of the Georgian Breakaway Abkhazia, Mr. Chirkba, said on Monday that the existing format of the Geneva talks launched in the aftermath of the August 2008 war are in need of drastic change. Opsni Press quoted Chirkba's opening remarks in a meeting with the Suchumi co-chairs of the Geneva talks. Quote, "We are not satisfied with the format of the Geneva meetings. It has to be changed because it limits our decisions. We cannot decide anything in this vicious format," end quote. His reasons as to why were not reported. Chirkba reiterated Suchumi's stance not to take part in the GALI meetings for Incident Prevention and Response Mechanism, IPRM, a framework created within the Geneva talks, which involves a hotline to facilitate information exchanges in the presence of the head of the EU monitoring mission in Georgia. Suchumi refuses to participate in the Gali IPRM meetings unless EUMM is represented at the meeting by people other than its head. It's worth noting that the Geneva talks are co-chaired by the EU, UN, and OSCE representatives and involve negotiators from Georgia, Russia, and the United States, as well as from Suchumi and Tsikhinvali. The next talks are due to start in October. I don't know. I don't know very much about this. Does this matter? What was more interesting was what Tom Duvall said yesterday, that he spent a little bit of time on the administrative boundary, as it's called, or as the Abkhaz say, the border around Zugdidi, and he said a lot of Abkhaz around, a lot of Abkhaz cars, a lot of people coming in, mainly shopping.
But can you cross by car? I thought you can only walk.
I thought I heard him say license plates. I don't know. Yeah. But he just said there are a bunch of Abkhaz around.
Yeah. Today there's an interesting column by David Ignatius in the Washington Post where he writes about an alleged cyber attack by the Georgian Secret Service against Ivanishvili. He writes that Tedo Chaparidze, a former Georgian ambassador to the U.S., and he's now in Bitsina's team, told State Department officials in D.C. that Ivanishvili's people had found 66 malware infections on 5 computers that are operated by Ivanishvili's family and close advisors, and that the virus had also then spread to about 50 other computers. And according to State Department, the State Department was told that this malware could turn on the computer's microphones and cameras and capture screenshots every few seconds and also record keystrokes and passwords. And Chaparidze's team said that their investigators also discovered that the devices could intercept data and that there was malware inserted by internet traffic providers in Georgia. So
that's creepy.
It's pretty creepy. That's the first time I really hear anything about that. I mean, everybody widely assumes that it's fairly easy for the government to tape or listen in to, you know, cell phone conversations if they ever wanted to. But it's always a big open question to what extent, you know, there's monitoring of the internet in Georgia. Hmm. And I've looked into that a little bit, and it's very difficult to find anybody with inside knowledge that would talk to you on or off the record. But so far, I haven't really found any indication that, you know, there's very, you know, that there's deep package analysis, as it's called, so that the Georgian government would be able to really see what you're doing online. But on the other hand, you know, there's a fairly opaque ownership structure in the two largest internet providers, Caucasus Online and Silknet. We don't really know who's behind these two companies. So, you know, who knows? So if anybody knows more about that.
Certainly, way back when Maestro was trying to get into the Silknet cable package, the negotiations broke down rather quickly, you know, with Silknet saying, oh, we just couldn't agree. It was all very frustrating, you know.
No, but Maestro is also difficult at times. Believe me, they are.
Okay.
There was a personal hatred between people involved in these negotiations. That's why.
Okay. You know better than me.
The embassy in D.C. said, according to the Washington Post, that had the government been informed about the alleged cyber attack, it would have acted vigorously and to determine who had undertaken it, adding, quote, should Bidzina Ivanishvili formally request that the government investigate this case, it will do so immediately.
Okay, great. All right, that's helpful.
Yeah, but it's a criminal case. I mean, you don't need to ask the government to investigate this. Once they know, they should investigate it. So.
And, yeah, well, we'll see where that leads. Yeah. What's interesting is that David Ignatius is a big shot, you know. So this is one more testament to the high-quality PR team that Mr. Ivanishvili has got working for him. Earlier on Thursday, the EU extended EUMM's mandate in Georgia for another year until September 14, 2013, saying that the mission, quote, has made a vital contribution to security and stability, end quote, on the ground. The mission was set up following the 2008 war to monitor the ceasefire. According to civil.ge, 21 million euros have been earmarked for the mission over the next 12 months.
That's a good amount of money.
That's a pretty hefty chunk of change there.
Well,
but
these cars eat a lot of gasoline.
Yeah, they got fancy cars. And although their salaries were just astronomical. I heard they've sort of made it not be a hardship post now. So
there's kind of the story making around, you know, and in among the poor NGO people, right, the poor diplomatic people in Tbilisi, the rumors about how much, you know, people on the top of the mission make.
Yeah, and the middle of the mission and the bottom of the mission.
Yes, yes, it's a good amount of money.
It is a good amount of money. And listen, we are very much in favor of the EUMM, and anybody listens here, I mean, thank you for being here. You know, we don't really hear much out of them. I guess that's not their job. It's like sort of like the OSCE, when they were here, they're like, they send all the stuff to the member states, and, you know, all of us hoi polloi are kind of like,
yeah,
thanks, you know. But anyway, great you're here, all your money and all,
yeah,
you know.
I hear
take
that,
us out to dinner one,
yeah,
of these days.
I hear that they have very, you know, kind of intense secrecy rules, who is allowed to read what report and stuff.
Oh,
like
even
that.
Internally?
Yeah.
Oh,
well,
really?
Among the diplomats, you know, EU member state government representatives.
Wow, so. Yeah. Well, you know, those euros are serious, man. Okay, Prime Minister Vano Medvedevich has hired a U.S. government relations and communications consultant for a 16-month period to explain Georgia's policy in the U.S. To the U.S. public and government circles, getting $320,000 in fees. Fiona Strategies, a newly launched firm, will provide Medvedevich with support in both foreign and domestic decisions, including things like speeches and public statements. Civil.ge reported on September 17th that apart from the contract price, the consultant will also receive a monthly fee of $1,500 for reasonable expenses, not including international and domestic travel. Fiona Strategies was launched by Molly McHugh, who was with the Washington-based lobbying firm Podesta Group, which the Georgia National Security Council has used as a contractor since 2010. Georgia Ministry of Defense has signed a $50,000 U.S. contract with U.S. public affairs firm HDMK to provide U.S. government officials and media with information about the policy priorities of the Ministry of Defense as they relate to U.S.-Georgia bilateral relations. According to the document submitted by the Department of Justice earlier this month, in addition to this, HDMK will facilitate direct interactions between ministry officials and relevant U.S. agencies, legislative offices, and media contacts.
I think the Georgian government has now 6 different U.S. consulting, lobbying, and public affairs firm working for them in D.C. That's a very big amount. I mean, does that make any sense? 6 companies? I mean, you have Democrats and Republicans.
Well, I don't know. You know, look, I mean, Molly McHugh, I mean, I wonder if, like, if
Podesta is a Democratic side of
I wonder if Podesta's ticked off that she took off and took that contract. I don't know. I have never met her, you know, she contacted me one time. I wasn't in the country, but, I mean, I don't know. You know, I don't think it's such a bad thing that the government has all. I mean, first of all, it's not that much money. I mean, it's like $1,500 expense account a month. Ooh, you know. I mean,
No. I mean, the total, it's $2.5 million a year now.
I don't know that that's unreasonable. For, you know, I think in many ways Georgia has derived benefit from that.
Even if more than that, but
I'm sure Vanishvili is spending more on that, more than that. On September 17th, 5 European foreign ministers with complicated names that I'll not read, from Bulgaria, the Czech Republic, Latvia, Lithuania, and Romania, held talks with senior government officials, the ruling party, and opposition representatives in Tbilisi. Visiting ministers hailed Georgia's reforms and underscored the importance of the upcoming October 1st parliamentary elections for the democratic development of Georgia. Lithuanian foreign minister commented, quote, Georgia's success story surprises and at the same time inspires many people. We strongly support the 3 important choices made by Georgia: the decision to continue the European and Euro-Atlantic integration process, the willingness to further implement necessary reforms, and the determination to organize free and fair elections, end quote. Yeah. Leader of Georgian Dream, Bidzina Ivanishvili, said on September 16th that his coalition would accept the results of the October 1st parliamentary election if international observer organizations deemed the vote legitimate. In an interview with Georgian Public Broadcaster's weekly program Accents, Bidzina also stated that it was in Misha's interest, not Russia's, to create disorder in Georgia after the elections because, and I quote, he knows he will lose the elections. That was an interesting interview. I mean, he had said he had only gone on, you know, friendly stations like one, like Channel 9, that he basically owns, and Maestro. This was on the public broadcaster with Eka Kvesitadze, who is a, you know, a fair and impartial, not one of those sort of aggressive talk show jerks.
I think she got a little bit into trouble yesterday or today because she joined the protesters outside the public broadcaster and chatted with some students there and said, you know, you should demand this and this if you're, you know, just right. some advice, you know.
Right.
And somebody was taping it, and the public broadcaster apparently put it on their site and said, this is a violation of our code of conduct.
Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah, she ought to know, you know, since her husband has worked closely with Medvedev for quite a while. And I don't know, but I mean, I think it was a good interview. I mean, she's very knowledgeable and whatever else. And I went down to the demonstration. I wouldn't say I joined them, but I was on the sidewalk there. And I think a lot of people are concerned about what's going on right now. Anyway, during the interview, she said, she said some interesting things, and Bidzina had a very funny part where he was talking about how, you know, I'm really good at getting, you know, consensus among people, and I can persuade people, you know, if there's an idea, we kick around an idea, and then I can pick the best one and get everybody to agree that that's the best way to do it, and I'm very, you know, persuasive. And she said, well, do you vote in this political council you have? No, it's like, you know, it's all consensus, and I'm able to persuade everybody, and you can just imagine how those meetings go. You know, you've got the billionaire who united the opposition and has decided who's on the party list and funds everybody. You know, like I can imagine.
There's not a lot of resistance.
I'm sure he's very, very persuasive. You know. Leading representatives of the opposition ruling party, including Misha, gathered on Sunday in Georgia's second largest city, Kutaisi, to attend the opening of the controversial rebuilding of the 11th century cathedral, named after Bagrat III, the first king of the United Georgia. The ceremony was held by the Georgian Orthodox church leader, Ilya II, who invited both the opposition and government to attend the opening ceremony. In a televised speech on September 14th, Misha called on all political parties to show unity. Weird. In the presence of his wife and six-year-old son, Misha said, "This cathedral is the most symbolic embodiment of the idea of Georgia's unity. I want to thank His Holiness for initiating restoration of this cathedral," end quote. When asked about his absence at the ceremony, Ivanishvili commented, "The opening of the restored cathedral is really positive event in our history, but Saakashvili is trying to hijack it and tries, like in other cases, to misappropriate it. The restoration of the cathedral has been done by the Georgian people, and I personally have contributed largely to its restoration," end quote.
That's the thing that the UNESCO was very unhappy about.
Right, well, I mean,
it
was in ruins, and they essentially just sort of plastered over the whole thing. I don't know how historically responsible the thing was. I don't know enough to say, but I mean, it was, they really, evidently it has been sort of looks like a new church now, you know, and yeah. Before it was quite an old church that had evidently been destroyed, had been bombed some time back. You know, and I will say, you know, doing that 12 days before an election seems, a little cynical, you know, that first of all, the fact that, you know, it was built. How much of that was Ivanishvili's money? I'm not really sure, but I think probably the government spent most, but I have no idea. And you know, it's just, I don't know, using a church like that in that way, it seems a little.
Yeah, but everything is wrapped up now. All the construction on Rustaveli, they're basically finishing up all the facades, and I'm sure a few days before the elections, everything will be clean. You know, sidewalks will be free to please you.
Finally, yeah, exactly.
I think your message got through.
Open sidewalks, thanks to Iare Pechi. Yeah, well. Editor of Samogrelo's Zemosvaneti Information Center, tspress.ge, Eliso Janashia, said she will file a case against high-ranking clergymen for alleged physical abuse and the destruction of her flip camera on September 13th. Media.ge reported that the incident between Janashia, the Chobi and Poti Archbishop Grigol, and clergyman Theodore took place when the journalist was filming the banners depicting President, Patriarch, and Archbishop Grigol together. The journalist was attempting to ask the Archbishop whether the banners placed in the churchyard were a demonstration of political support for Misha. Spokesperson for the Patriarch's office, Archpriest Mikhail Botkveli, commented on September 13th that clergymen must not physically touch anyone. He said that this is likely to turn into a matter of discussion if the bishop truly physically abused anyone. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know. Physical abuse by priests in the United States means a little bit different thing. But, yeah, certainly breaking cameras. Anyone who ever wants to break a camera when something's being filled, and this goes for anyone in the interior ministry or anyone else, like, don't break a camera. It's really a bad thing to do. And evidently, archbishops, too, could use that advice. Civil.ge reports on September 14th that Georgia will host a NATO disaster response and consequence management exercise scheduled for the 22nd to the 28th of September near Tbilisi. Over 1,000 members of civilian and military teams from 24 NATO and partner countries will participate in the field exercises, which are organized by the Euro-Atlantic Disaster Response Coordination Center, EIRDC. it will be the 14th such field exercise. Armenia hosted similar drills in 2012.
That's an interesting timing also. I mean, do you think the elections were kind of timed around that, or that just coincidence?
I don't know. It's disaster stuff. I mean, I don't know. Who knows?
If these are soldiers, or I don't know, you know, part soldiers, part civilians.
No idea. On September 18th, representatives of the Patriarch of Georgia traveled to Istanbul to meet with the World Patriarch to discuss the inclusion of the Abkhaz Church in the World Orthodox Church. They heard the religious leaders' conditions for inclusion. According to the Patriarch's spokesperson, a decision will be made by the Patriarchate only after clarifying the details. As the theologist Basil Kobakhidze states, quote, "It seems that the Patriarchate of Georgia intends to make some concessions in this regard, even the fact that the World Orthodox Church is discussing this question is a failure of the Georgian Church's foreign policy," end quote. According to Basil Kobakhidze, the situation is a result of instructions received from the Kremlin.
And Basil is, I think, a kind of a former priest who was expelled from the church and is now a critic of the church, a well-known critic here.
Well-known critic of the church, but an extremely smart person. Yeah, yeah, yeah. A lot of people follow him on Facebook, and he's frankly one of the few well-informed people that that really talks about the church and says what's going on there. I mean, it's such a taboo in Georgian society to criticize the church. Good that he's around and knows what he's talking about. Mm-hmm. Civil.ge reports, with parliamentary elections less than 2 weeks away, political TV advertising rates have significantly increased in two major nationwide broadcasters, Rustavi Ody and Imedi. Next week, prices for a minute-long political ad on Rustavi Ody will range from 2,000 lari during morning hours on weekends to 22,000 lari for late-night talk shows on Thursdays. A month ago, rates on Rustavi Ody ranged from 660 lari to 6,000 lari per minute. This from a dedicated listener. 30 or so gold miners from Adnauli were sent on a bus to a UNM rally. Three of them said they could not go and were fired. We always talk about firings. Transparency International, the hardest working NGO in Georgia, has reported on that. And everybody says, give me examples. Okay, there are some examples, in the Modinelli gold mine.
And the government could say it's a privately owned company.
Yeah.
But we don't really know who owns that company. It's one of the famous fake transparent licensing projects where, there's a tender announced, it's on some website, but in the end everybody knows it's an inside deal, so why bother?
Kobanakopia. Right.
And others.
Yeah, I don't know. Via the Bahamas and, wherever.
Cyprus, yeah.
On September 17th, Georgia's secondary and higher education institutes began a new school year. Okay, there was a complete mess with textbooks, and let me tell you my own personal experience. My children go to a private school. They were told to get their textbooks.
That's a bit elitist.
I know. I would love to send them to a public school, but, just for portability, IB, whatever else. Big supporter of public. They went to public schools in London, Anyway, we looked around. You make the decision when you have kids, Mr. Euro Smarty Pants Communist. So we had to go get textbooks, and because it's Georgia, the Ministry of Education decides what the curriculum will be. There's a mandatory there, and they have this incredibly baroque and goofy, curriculum that the school has to sort of deal with. And they were told to get all these textbooks and where to get them. Well, go to this store and then go to that store and go to this school and that school, waiting in line for 2 hours. Nobody has the textbooks. In the end, they said, go to PSP, the pharmacy. And it's like, and people were going in there, they were lining up to get the textbooks for their kids.
From the pharmacy.
And then when you get there, they say, are you a member? Say no. Say, well, you have to have a special PSP rewards card with 20 bonus units, you know, because, you know, to get one of the things, because we don't, you know, have enough textbooks. Yeah. I mean, just appalling, appalling mess by the education ministry relating to relating to textbooks. And so,
but it's interesting that PSP happened to stock up on the right textbooks.
That with PSP, the pharmacy and well-known textbook purveyor. Who knows what's going on there. But
there's always been some stories about who prints the textbooks and who's not allowed to print them, and that contracts are basically subcontracted to the right people.
Yeah, it's a big mess, because it's like it's one of the cases where the government gets to coerce many thousands of economic transactions, and you know, that can be quite quite lucrative. And funny that it ended up in PSP, at least in the case of you know, of my kid. But let's have some long term planning by the education ministry for next year, and you know, get this ironed out. New supermarket Smart opened up on Rustavelli in the former post office building. Smart has some products difficult to get your hands on, including Starbucks coffee, what do you know, and avocados. Right. Prices for some products are lower than Goodwill or Carrefour. Smart's open 24 hours. I didn't know about that. Visoil, which owns Smart, is working on opening a franchise on the Wendy's franchise right in the same building on the corner by the Radisson. So this is a great thing for those of us who don't drive around and live in the middle of town and don't live in the Northwest Territories, you know, out by the U.S. Embassy and the little village and QSI and whatever else, or Carrefour now, you know, which is right by the ambassador's house. And supposedly he's got a lot of good stuff. I've not visited, but luckily, our Rustavelli correspondent, Matthias Hooter,
I've crossed the street.
Has crossed the street and written allegedly a fabulous review to Megabreds about the whole thing. So tell us more.
No, there's very friendly, well-trained staff. They're, you know, they have the usual slightly overstaffed issue. So you have people walking behind you, offering you a basket.
Are they offering you a basket, or are they making sure you don't steal stuff?
No, I think they're not the mandaturi. They're actually trying to be helpful, which is nice. And they had, when I was leaving, they had a guy with a board who was like doing a questionnaire and asking people for their feedback and what they were thinking. And so, I mean, I think they're trying to do a good job. They have a fairly big selection of
stuff. Do they have, I mean, is it all like the only smart thing that I've been to is the quite impressive, like, thing when you go out
of Gori.
On the road to Gori, like, it's you're going outside of town.
Right.
And it's like a gas, where they have
because it's Whistle, so it's they want to do it as a gas station,
right? They have
store, basically.
They have gas cars that use propane. Uh-huh. Yeah. And I've gone to that, and it's kind of, I don't know, it's prepackaged stuff. Like, do they have produce, and can you get?
Yeah,
you
know, they have a big selection of, you know, meat if you're into that. They have like a prosciutto thing that where they cut you know, the prosciutto in front of you. They have. The salads and rice and French fries stuff that they microwave for you. And they have a small cafeteria or cafe where you can, you know, sit down with your laptop and drink coffee. And
the one at Goodwill is horrible. The coffee at Goodwill is just appalling. I mean, the one out in Dijon.
Yeah.
Is this, you know?
No, it's probably, it's like a coffee shop corner. It's
all right. All right. Well, we'll give it a shot. So everyone, you know, especially the Tbilisi urban hipster Tbilpod core constituency, go by the Smart Store and let us know what you think. And, you know, first of all, thank God that they've got that sidewalk finally fixed. They are right next door to the Imeli building, owned by, I don't know, I guess the, you know, the emirate of, you know, Rakim or whoever.
I don't know if what's happening there.
Whoever owns that building is now your next door neighbor, Visoil. So can you get them to fix the sidewalk there and do something useful with that building other than just having it sitting there like that? And also keep in mind that they're now doing that the repairs in front of the Radisson. And as I wrote about a week or two ago, you know, people walk in and out of there. So let's get some pedestrian, you know, set up there so that people can walk in and out of your store comfortably. Since that's going to be your core group, it's not going to be anyone's got a car. They're going to, you know, they probably live out in the sticks and drive out there all the time. This is going to be for people who walk and work.
They have parking in the back as well, but
okay. Yeah. Don't use the parking in the back. okay. Each podcast, we feature the GeoCapital number of the week. The GeoCapital is Georgia's best and coolest microfinance organization. Full disclosure, I'm a shareholder. They kindly give to peoplepod.com an interesting number which lets people know what's going on in Georgia. This week's number is 8.2%, which is Georgia's GDP growth in the second quarter of this year compared to the same period last year. Agriculture took a dive, going from 550 million lari to 475 million lari. While the manufacturing and construction sectors grew with strong growth, according to a statement issued by Geostat on September 18th.
Yeah, I guess we can see why construction is doing well at the moment, but after the elections might go down
we'll
a little
see.
Bit.
You never know. You never know. We'll see. We'll have to remember to compare
But good to see that manufacturing is picking up.
That's absolutely. Absolutely. Manufacturing of what?
I mean, there's all these stories about some you know, not sweatshops, but some, you know, factories that produce clothing around the football Euro Championship. There were all these stories about some of the sports shirts being produced in Georgia and things like that. I don't know.
Okay. Transparency International Georgia will provide free workspace to members of the international press, and we know we've got a lot of you among our listeners, covering Georgia's parliamentary elections on October 1st, and invites all international journalists visiting or locally based to make use of the workspace's resources throughout Election Day and Election Night. Space is located in TI's office at 26 Rustavelli in central Tbilisi, opposite the Opera. Will remain open all during Election Day and the count. For more information, go to transparency.ge and search for International Press Workspace. You need a register to get in there, so just let us know your email address and tell us you intend to stop on by. Colga Movies this week, Friday, tomorrow night, September 21st, is Hugo, which is cool. I've seen it. September 24th, Midnight in Paris with my childhood buddy Owen Wilson. September 26th.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Buddy.
Yeah, absolutely. Our families were best friends. True fact. Luke and his brother Luke and Andrew, too. September 26th, Piros Mani from Georgia, 1969. Beautiful, really beautiful movie. They all start at 8 o'clock at Domkino across from McDonald's and Rustavelli Metro. That's it for this week. My Twitter address is at TXTBUK. That's Tango, X-Ray, Tango, Bravo. Uniform Kilo. Our email is tbilpod, tblpod, @gmail.com, or post something on our forum that's on our website at tbilpod.com. And we will finish with 1978 by Amy Stewart, Knock on Wood.